From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on July 1st, day one on the job for the new superintendent of the Rochester City School District, Terry Dade. Terry comes to Rochester from Falls Church, Virginia, where since 2015 he served as an assistant superintendent for the Fairfax County Public Schools. In that role, he oversaw 13 schools that were under state scrutiny and restored 12 to good standing. Many of those schools faced challenges similar to those faced by Rochester's schools. Dade comes to the district during a time of contention and uncertainty, especially as a debate is waged between the City of Rochester and the Board of Education about a possible state takeover. But as reported by our colleague Tim Macaluso at City Newspaper, Dade is approaching the job with confidence and calmness, perhaps exactly what the district needs right now. He joins us on Connections this hour to discuss priorities and plans for the district, our first time with the new superintendent in studio. Terry Dade, welcome. Nice having you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Fair to say it's a time of contention and a lot to talk about there, but just a little bit about your background here. You know, you could have probably had a lot of different opportunities, and you chose Rochester. You and your family chose Rochester. Do you choose Rochester thinking you're going to be here for a while?
Yes, absolutely. In looking at districts that I was going to be led to serve, I was looking for a district with significant challenges to match my skill set for school improvement for all students and providing that high-quality education regardless of zip code, demographics, or background. So I've absolutely fallen in love with the city of Rochester, and I am absolutely committed to serve this great city in the long term.
Tell our listeners where you grew up.
I grew up, I was born in Washington, D.C. to a single father, and my grandma served as my maternal figure. My biological mom was not in the picture at the time, so I was being raised by a very young Washington, D.C. police department officer. But my ma took me under her wing. For kindergarten, my family moved out to the Northern Virginia area of Fairfax County, where I served as principal, teacher, and assistant superintendent. So small family, just two sisters with me at the time, and a close-knit family that are all in the D.C., Virginia, Maryland area.
Is there a teacher or two that stand out in your memory from your childhood that made an impression on you?
Absolutely. Ms. Hunsberger was my fourth grade teacher, and it was my first elementary school move from one city to another, and I was devastated. And I sincerely remember Ms. Hunsberger and her warm welcome, her expectation in her classroom of making me feel welcome into a new community, and then the joy that she brought to learning. I remember bringing music into our lessons, whether it be social studies or math, and music is one of my passions. So as a young kid, with some challenges, it was great to have someone so inspirational like Ms. Hunsberger. So thank you, Ms. Hunsberger.
Well, look, and part of why I ask about teachers is because I think it's really an interesting time as the country is debating what the causes of educational challenges are. Rochester is obviously a district with deep challenges, but it is also hardly the only urban district with deep challenges in this country. And I know you know that, and we're going to talk about some of your strategies and approaches there. But you've got some people who are sort of debating this idea of chicken and egg, that if you have kind of aching poverty, that there's only so much you can do. You can't reform schools your way out of poverty. And that if you fix poverty, you go a long way to fixing schools. Whereas others, probably led by this mayor, though I haven't spoken to her directly about this, would say, no, really, it starts with the schools, and the schools contribute to a lot of the pain that urban centers are facing if the schools are poor. Where do you come down on that?
I'm clearly on the both end. Schools have a primary role in making sure that we're providing a high-quality education for each and every child, regardless of socioeconomic status, background, or zip code, period. That's my expectation in Rochester City. That was my expectation as a teacher and a principal. That said, we can't mitigate the challenges that poverty presents to our students and families each and every day. So what I'm looking for is a true partnership with the state, our local government, and our school system to work together to address the impact of poverty on this city. We do know that businesses are attracted and their employees are attracted to great schools. And we know that significant improvements in our crime rates What we're doing with our neighborhood practices and real estate practices in the city all come together to contribute to where we are with our poverty levels here in Rochester City.
Talking to Terry Day, the new superintendent of Rochester City Schools. We already have some listener questions. We'll get to those later this hour. And I hope this is the first of many visits with the superintendent here on Connections, because there has been turnover in the position, but there's turnover in all positions of superintendents across the country. And if he's successful and if his vision is right, he'll be here for a long time in this community. So it's an important job. And I do want to ask you, when it first hit your radar, how long ago was it? How quickly did you kind of move into the candidacy and the job? When did it first hit your radar?
Rochester City first hit my radar back in January of last year, of this year.
Of this year.
Pretty far removed from the final interviews in the process.
And the reason I ask that is because I'm curious to know, would you still have pursued this job if you could have foreseen the community debate over a state takeover and everything else that's been sort of roiling this district in the last few months, would you still have pursued the job?
Absolutely. And I have to say, in all honesty, that a lot of folks tried to steer me away from Rochester City merely with the impact of having a distinguished educator and some of the challenges that Rochester City was experiencing. But like I said, my passion and my love and what I truly feel that I'm being led to do is to serve our most challenged populations, to show what can happen and how you can be an exemplar in urban education with the right leadership and the right partnerships with everyone around you.
To make sure I understand, you're speaking of Jaime Aquino, the distinguished educator who was brought on by New York State and offered an extensive report on the issues that he found facing the district. The advice you were getting was, don't take this job, what, because you might not have a lot of control? Or what was sort of some of the sentiment that you were hearing?
What I was hearing was, with a distinguished educator, there's a lot of implications that could occur as a result of that. With further monitoring, who's in control at the time. So a lot of the concerns that I was hearing coming in were around job security. And I've never taken on a position with me at the forefront of concern. I'm really concerned to do one thing, and that's to provide a high quality education for our students. So it attracted me almost even more to know that this community really seemed to need a leader who was going to bring people together rather than to allow it to continue to be a lot of pointing fingers at one another.
Do you think a state takeover of the school board is logical, is a good idea?
Absolutely not. I say that because I'm a researcher at heart. I've looked at districts across the country, and I've not seen that be a successful model. So I'm still looking for that evidence across the country in an urban district like Rochester City, where state takeover has shown to be promising. So I believe we have the right people right here in Rochester City with the passion and the heart and the dedication to do what's right by our students. And all we need to do is do a better job of coming together to work with one another rather than dividing each other apart.
A decade ago in this community, there were debates about mayoral control. Do you think that would make sense?
I can't speak to mayoral control versus state takeover explicitly. I do have experience where I served in a district that had mayoral control, and we were doing well. All that said, I don't believe that right now is the time to change governance structure. In Rochester City, we need to stay focused on student learning and our outcomes. And I feel that right now, like we were talking about superintendent turnover, all of that has a consequence and a ripple-down effect on our system. And if we were to start talking about governance structure changes, I truly believe that it'll impact our classrooms in a negative manner.
So the judge recently weighed in on this possible November referendum. The city has appealed that, and I know that that's largely out of your hands. So we'll have to see what the courts say about a city's appeal on that. What I did notice was our old colleagues at Channel 13, for example, reported that it was just, I think, the same day that you had first met with Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren, and the mayor had said the following about that meeting, and I want to get your take on this. Here's what the mayor told Channel 13. The mayor went so far as to suggest that the superintendent might have been sabotaged by his own school board. because the mayor says she met with you and you didn't give her warning that this lawsuit was coming from the district disputing the referendum. And the mayor says, quote, obviously, and I can't say this for sure, but if you're building a relationship with the mayor and you're having a meeting with her and you know that today or tomorrow or within the next couple of days, she's going to be served with a lawsuit to say, hey, listen, by the way, I want to build a relationship with you. And because I want to build this relationship with you, I want you to know we're going to fight this in court. And that's it. But that never came up. It's interesting that it didn't come up, end quote. That's from the mayor. Why didn't it come up?
So first and foremost, I want to be clear with everyone that the purpose of the meeting was a meet and greet. Our first meeting back in July was rescheduled. So this meeting had been on the books for weeks in the making. The decision by the board was made the night before. That was public knowledge. So I was clear with the mayor that I didn't feel that it was my place to discuss a governance issue that far exceeded where my realm of control was. So I decided to stay in my lane and stick with, as the superintendent of Rochester City, I shared what my plans were for the district and asked how we could partner to move the school district forward.
Okay. And do you feel like you've got a constructive relationship with the mayor right now?
We had a very brief meeting, so I think much more to come. And I'm hoping that we truly can partner in this work together. I know that I need her. I need city council. I need our team in Rochester City School District to be successful. I made it clear to the board if they were looking for Superman to come in and address all the challenges in the district alone, then I'm the wrong person. I look forward to building bridges and providing partnerships for the city to move forward.
I'm certain you've seen the mayor's video that she addressed to the children of Rochester following the judge's decision to block the November referendum. And in that video, she said that the leadership of the district, and I think the assumption is she's talking about the school board, actively wants to prevent children from succeeding because they see children in Rochester as a threat, and that by simply keeping them down, essentially, they get to keep their jobs and stay in power. I mean, those are very strong words from the mayor. Was it too strong? Did you have a problem with that message, or do you think that was appropriate?
So I just want to come at this how I approach leadership. One, I feel that you have to remove character from what our folks are doing. So I have yet to come across anyone in my experience in my short time here that doesn't have a deep passion for success for this great city, for the success of our students and families, and our board is included in that group. So to question character and intent would not be my approach. I think you can also always have conversations about, are we doing our jobs as effectively as possible? And if not, how can we tweak and modify to serve better? But when it comes to character, I believe we have to get to know each other a lot better so we can make statements about anyone that I come across to make sure that I'm get to know them well enough to be able to even warrant a response about someone's character, drive, or passion for serving our students.
That's fair enough. And I'm also thinking about what kids might, to the extent that kids are actually following politics, I'm not sure kids follow politics that much, but to the extent that students are actually watching this message, the mayor did conclude on a more positive note. She cited Frederick Douglass. She cited the need for agitating for change. But, you know, when you've got the mayor saying to students that the leadership of your school district doesn't really care about you, doesn't want you to succeed, wants you to accept things that are already broken and doesn't want to fix them, are you worried about what kids are going to internalize with that kind of a message?
I do. More for me, and this is something I've been clear about from day one, even when I was interviewing, that I was going to be the model for optimism, hope, a cheerleader for what's going well each and every day. I could find a success story each and every day of next school year with an exceptional teacher, an exceptional parent, an exceptional administrator who are doing right by our students above and beyond the call of duty. So I do think it's important that we as adults model what disagreement might look like in a professional manner, how we can work together despite differences, to move their education forward. So all I can point to is I hope that every time a child in Rochester City sees me on camera or hears me out and about, that they hear someone who cares deeply about their education, someone that is a champion for their teacher, providing resources for their school and their city, to make sure that they have what they need to be successful beyond their K-12 experience.
City Hall did respond to some of the new graduation numbers. And listeners, if you missed it yesterday, the school board president, Van White, among others, are touting new unofficial but numbers from the district showing that the district-wide graduation rate, four-year rate's at 58%. That's up another about 4 percentage points. East High in particular is at 65%. That's a 13 percentage point increase. City Hall came back and said, yeah, but. They essentially said most of that is local diplomas. It's not Regents diplomas. We need better prepared students. There's not a whole lot to celebrate here in the data. They're basically saying a lot of those gains aren't really gains. Do you agree with that? Is that a fair critique?
Completely disagree. Every school district in the state of New York are operating by the same guidelines and expectations as established by New York State Department of Education. We're all utilizing the same pathways to graduation to allow our students to show what they know and be able to do, to be college and career ready, to successfully earn a diploma in this great state. So there are no special rules just for Rochester City that are any different from every other district in New York State. So if you look at our increase in local diplomas or any of the other pathways, I just encourage those to look around at our suburban counterparts at Buffalo, Syracuse, the other Big Five, and see that they're doing the same thing. We're all offering multiple pathways to show that our students are successful in their K-12 experience and are indeed ready to pursue whatever they hope to experience beyond their K-12 experience.
And to be clear to the superintendent and to listeners, I'm not trying to sort of pit this as City Hall versus the district, but I'm simply responding to some of the comments yesterday. And I can't speak for the mayor, but she might say, look, we want more students to graduate, but if they are routinely arriving at college to the extent that the students are going on to higher ed and they need extra help, then what have we really done? We heard Robert Hoggard, who ran for the school board, who worked at Keuka College, who made the same concerns yesterday and in his campaign for school board, saying too often we are not. So in other words, if 58% are graduating in Rochester, the percentage of those students who are college ready is going to be less than a lot of suburban counterparts, and that's not good enough. So how do you measure that? How do you respond to that?
So first on the piece of college and career ready, New York State can't even come up with a definition of what that means. And I would say that was true back in Fairfax County as well. We defined college and career ready as really having the 21st century skills to be successful beyond your K-12 experience. And those are things that are very hard to measure. Things like how well you're able to collaborate and cooperate with others, your communication skills, creativity, problem solving, and then having a global perspective on the world. As we think about everyone's role in our education process, one of the things I counted as a school principal at the elementary level was it was easy for our fourth grade teachers to look at our third grade teachers and say, you didn't provide all the preparation needed for my fourth graders to be successful. The easiest thing we can do in leadership is point fingers. I would encourage our higher education and beyond to know that we're all working hard to make sure our students are successful. We're all following the guidelines established by the state of New York. When they come to you, we hope that you provide the remediation, intervention, and enrichment necessary for your students to be successful, much like we did in their K-12 experience.
Let me read an email from a listener who says, Evan, in my experience and through the many teachers I have worked with and spoke with, parent involvement tends to be the number one influence on the success of a child's education. I'm excited to hear what ideas the superintendent has to help get parents more involved in their child's education, and if it's a matter of means, i.e. the parents do not have transportation to get to the school for meetings or work multiple jobs, etc. Does he have any ideas to get creative and ensure that we create solutions for those reasons? If it's a matter of the parents not having the same value on education as some others and not wanting to be involved, what can we do to help if they don't want help, since it's the kids that are ultimately affected? That comes from a listener named Ryan.
It's an fantastic question, and it's a question I've received in every venue since starting in this position, our concern with parent engagement. So my first charge to this great city is coming to a common definition of what parent engagement is. If we're looking for parent engagement to equal number of parents in a particular school at a particular event, something that I put on as a superintendent, we count heads and say, where are the parents? Then we're grossly misinformed. I had the pleasure of visiting with another superintendent in Buffalo, and I really think that he hit the mark right. He has a commitment with parents to say, we're going to do these 20 things for your child to make sure that they're successful. We need these four things from you to make sure that you're contributing well to your child's education. One, like the listener said, value education. Make sure that you're reiterating that education is critically important to your child's success in life. Two, make sure that they're up on time and get to school each and every day. Three, that you have a quiet spot in wherever you're living for your child to complete classwork and homework. And four, having that open communication when a teacher calls, respond back so that you can see what concerns they might have or what celebrations they might like to share with you. No matter what your income, no matter what your background, no matter what your experience is, all of our parents in our community can commit to those four commitments to make sure that we're all partnering in this difficult work ahead.
Now, there's a lot of approaches that districts will take to trying to improve schools and try to improve outcomes. Before we get to some listener phone calls, and if you're on the line, listeners, we'll take you in the second half hour here with the superintendent of Rochester City Schools, Terry Dade here. Number one, you've got the East High Partnership, which, you know, I mean, I know you've only been here a month and a half, but I'm sure you're getting up to speed on what's going on there. And yesterday, the school board president, Van White, on this program broke a little news when he said that he's not speaking for the board, he's speaking for himself, but he wants to see a move toward more investment and to create a second kind of partnership modeled after East. And yes, it's more per pupil, it's more money, but he says the outcomes are proven to be significant. Would you support that?
So one, I want to be clear, I applaud what's been going on at East. I think it is something that should be honored and celebrated here in the city as one model for successful educational outcomes in our system. I want to be clear that it's one model. I believe there's other models that we need to investigate as a Rochester city to make sure that we have a portfolio of schools that are going to lead to highly successful students. So thinking of different magnet programs, arts programs, and the like that other districts have really investigated fully to say, are we providing a variety of experiences to make sure our students are successful? So I would fully agree with exploring further different models. I'm not sure that I would pick East as necessarily the model that we would replicate widely, but I would be very interested in that conversation moving forward.
Now, I noticed you didn't use the word charter schools. Generally speaking, how do you feel about charters?
I think a great school is a great school. So one of the things that I think charter schools have gotten right, and I had the pleasure of experiencing this in D.C., is it is every school's responsibility to meet the needs of the students that attend that school and to listen to parents to hear what they're looking for in their child's education. So I referenced my previous district by saying I was in a public school in D.C., and our superintendent allowed me to craft an educational program that met the needs of my particular school, and I had a wait list over 400 families. So it's not charter versus public school. It's really making sure that we are all committed to making sure that every single school in Rochester City is a school of choice for our families in this area.
I don't want to derail the conversation too much because this is probably could get its own hour when you work under someone like Michelle Rhee, who has been such a – Terry's got the smile on his face like you're going to go there. But just because sometimes a name can be controversial and can sort of immediately bifurcate the audience into sort of pro and con. And I understand that people are more complex and leadership's more complex. Generally speaking, what did you make of Michelle Rhee?
So I applauded some of the things that she did. I've looked at every single leader I've had the pleasure to serve under and look at things that I would do myself and then things that I might do a bit differently. What I will never hesitate for applauding Ms. Rhee for is she got rid of the complacency in D.C. public schools. I was a teacher at a charter school, and what I saw as a teacher amongst my colleagues was shameful. What was allowed to take place in classrooms, administrative response to incidents of violence in the school, absolutely shameful. With Michelle Rhee, her expectations were every single adult is responsible for a child's education. If you're not performing at an exemplary level and have that same commitment to high expectations, she was going to find another place for you to serve. So I applauded that for Michelle Rhee. I saw an instant change in D.C. public schools. Something I would do differently, and I think people have seen it in my leadership thus far, is how do you build coalitions and partnerships in the work alone? So I'm not a Superman coming in to be a one-man show, so I don't want my name to send the same type of message across anywhere. It really needs to be we. What are we doing to move Rochester City forward? So something I would do differently is how do I bring people closer together to move the work forward?
I hope listeners are hearing he's taken on very direct questions in a very direct way, and that's very refreshing for a host, and I appreciate, despite the fact that, you know, I know certain things and concepts can be polarizing. So listeners, what do you want to hear from the superintendent? It's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. One more question from the host before I turn it over to listeners. You worked on sort of turnaround schools. When you look at what? You had something like a 12 out of 13 success ratio in the turnaround schools you worked with. Mm-hmm. What's the short answer for why you think what you were doing worked? What happened there?
So a continuation of my last response, we focused deeply on the relationship between central office and the school. There is no one single answer to turning around a school or a school district. You absolutely have to enter with relationships in mind and inquiry in mind that no one knows better what's going on in their school building than parents, teachers, and our students. So as a central office, we said we are absolutely committed to listening deeply to the concerns that are taking place, ask questions like why, and then serve as in true service to the schools to say, what can we do to support you? It changed the dynamic. It was no longer central office telling a school what to do. It was no longer the Commonwealth of Virginia telling a school what to do. It was us working side by side with the teachers and the principal to make some dramatic improvements occur in a very short time period.
That's the model you'd like to see followed here.
Absolutely.
Terry Dade is the new superintendent of the Rochester City School District after our only break of the hour. We come back with some of your questions for the new superintendent, his first hour right here with us on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, the Summer of Food takes us on the road to two new locations in old Finger Lake spaces. In the town of Hammondsport, it's the Park Inn. The Park Inn with new leadership and a brand new vision. Over on Seneca Lake, it's the Plum Point Lodge and Sepulta Dining. Should you plan a trip? Find out next hour on Connections. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and to the phones we go. Sam in Rochester first. Go ahead, Sam.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And I just want to say to Mr. Daniels, welcome to the city of
Dade,
Rochester.
Superintendent Dade, Sam, D-A-D-E.
Dade. I just want to say welcome to our city, the Flower City, as it's known. But I just want to make this comment here about the mayor. Now, the mayor has been on city council for years before she was ever mayor. And why is it that she cares so much about the kids that she did not try to implement some of these things that she's trying to do now? To me, this is just a power struggle that she's involved in. I really don't think it's about the kids, because if it was about the kids, it wouldn't make any difference who's mayor. You try to get some of these things implemented and get it done ahead of time, get it done on schedule. And look, I just wish you all the luck. I'm gonna pray for you, because they change superintendents like they change in their shirt every day. And that's hard to implement a solid program when you keep changing the dynamics of what one individual has to another individual. And that's hard for it makes it even more difficult for the kids when you do that. So we're going to be praying for you. And I just pray that the mayor get over this power struggle and come to the table and try to work and understand if it is for the kids, let's work it out and let it benefit the kids. Don't just go on this power struggle with a blind rage, because if you can't have all the power, let it share it with somebody else.
All right, Sam.
And let it benefit the people involved.
All right, Sam, thank you for the phone call.
Thank
Superintendent,
you.
Go ahead.
I really appreciate it. And my heart of hearts is getting at the heart of what you said earlier. I'm really looking for partners in this work. It is so complex that if we don't have a coalition between our city, our state, and our school district, we are not serving our students and our families well. So I look forward to the work ahead. I appreciate your prayers and look forward to your support in the years to come.
Tiana writes and says, just wants to revisit your comments on East. Why not replicate East? Is it cost or something else?
So again, I'm going to reference the portfolio of schools that I believe is something that we just need to ask questions about here in Rochester City. So as I look at our high school and school portfolio, are we truly maximizing the different options for our schools and families to make Rochester City a school of choice for their family? So I brought up things like the arts and East are currently in place. Do we want to explore more STEM and career tech and other options? So I want to be clear, it's not a yes or no to East. I'm just asking that we have further dialogue about expanding our portfolio of schools with the ultimate goal of student success and making sure that we're offering schools of choice for our families in Rochester City.
Is cost an issue with East?
Cost is absolutely an issue in East. And if you think of the original intent of East was a failing school that needed additional resources right away to show dramatic success. So anytime you enter into a turnaround situation like that where you're facing closure or another option, it's going to come with a price tag. Knowing that we have 50 schools plus in Rochester City, I'm not sure that we have the financial capacity to replicate East all over the city as the only answer to education. I've been doing this long enough to know that East is going to be an absolute success in the years to come and will continue to do so. My question is, how do you do other things differently to make sure that we're providing exceptional outcomes for all of our students in every single school in Rochester City?
Gloria in Canandaigua next on the phone. Go ahead, Gloria.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm so excited to hear what Mr. Dade has to say about getting different options, about magnet schools. And I don't know, Mr. Dade, if you know about the Milwaukee Public Schools and what they did from starting from 1975. Are you aware of that at all?
I'm vaguely aware of.
I'll tell you one thing that has touched our lives dramatically. When we lived there, we lived in Milwaukee for 33 years. I actually grew up in Rochester. But they had magnet schools, and it was ordered by the Supreme Court. One of them became a Montessori elementary school it started with K-4 through 5th grade, and the school district offered teachers who already had, teaching certificates to get Montessori training through a Montessori Institute that was then established, not through the public schools, but in the city. And that school, our daughter went to it, was so successful, and parents were fighting to get their kids mm-hmm. in that school. Our daughter, who did get in, because I cried, because I said, you said she could get in. Anyway, she is now a public school Montessori teacher in one of the seven. There are now seven public Montessori schools in the city of Milwaukee, which, if you know anything about Milwaukee, there's a lot of wonderful things. However, it is very, very poor. Mm-hmm. And the kids, I mean, now that my daughter is a teacher, Montessori teacher there, you know, and she has kids with all different backgrounds, and I'll tell you, those kids cry when they can't go to school.
Mm-hmm.
And the parents have been involved because the kids, by and large, do well.
Well, Gloria, let me let the superintendent jump in here, because I know you said you're sort of vaguely familiar, but what's the larger lesson you take from that call?
The larger lesson in Milwaukee and right next door in Buffalo, Buffalo said, you know, let's listen to parents and see what they're looking for a high-quality education for their child, and then we need to listen and provide the educational programming as such. So in Northern Virginia, where I'm from, we have Thomas Jefferson High School for Science and Technology, one of the most highly regarded schools in the country. Buffalo sent a team to TJ to learn more about their program and then brought it back to their city to say, rather than closing one of their high schools that was struggling, let's replicate what they're doing at TJ for Science and Technology, which we know is a bustling field for employment, for high-order thinking. When I think about college and career ready, that's what I'm looking for. So I love the concept of a magnet model. I do believe it could be successful here in Rochester City because our parents are already choosing options all over the city. So we don't have the same constraints that some other districts have of neighborhood school versus sending their child across the city. We already have that in place here in Rochester City. So magnet is another thing that I would just love to explore. Most importantly, the message to Mr. Dawson's point is I would love to hear from our families. What options are we missing that we can programmatically replicate to get you to have confidence in our schools and bring your children back to this great city?
Mr. Dawson is my dad. Tedna in Rochester next on the phone with the superintendent. Go ahead, Tedna.
Welcome, Superintendent. I've been here since 1981, and I'm very privileged to be part of this community. Recently, I volunteered at School 17, which had the lowest reading scores in the entire 50 states for fourth and fifth graders. I was there for 10 hours a week for a year. My nephew was teaching. And we were visiting parents in their homes at night. I was serving as a translator and chaperone. And I would submit that we need to commit to valuing our parents more and meeting them where they're at. I think we can do it with Skype. I think that sending people letters in many, many homes, they had three or four letters from the school, carefully preserved, unopened, because neither parent could read, but carefully preserved in a notebook so that I could read them to them when we came. But they were unopened because the parents acknowledged that they were illiterate. And I read the letters that are written, and they assume a level of college-level literacy on the part of the recipient, the parent. And I would submit that we now have the technology, now that we have this wonderful grant where kids are getting computers, where we could be sending Skype-type communications, and we could send them and have them received where it didn't have to be reviewed in real time, where parents could review their child's report card by watching a video of the teacher reading a report card and commenting on it, and then having telephone conferences. So many of the parents, at least at School 17, do not have access to a vehicle. They're going to two part-time jobs on the bus, and asking them to come and visit the school and miss a day of work is quite a hardship, whereas a teleconference would be so much more productive. I want us to love and respect and honor these parents who are working so hard to earn a living despite frequent severe literacy constraints, and we should honor them, cherish them, and give them the space they need to succeed.
Tedna, thanks for the phone call. Yeah, thanks, Tedna. Go ahead, Superintendent.
I couldn't agree more, Tedna. And first, thank you for your commitment to the students and families at School 17. What you all are doing to think outside of the box, rather than just asking parents to enter into the building to communicate, going to them is what we need more of. That said, I do want to share that as we think of neighborhood schools and in that concept and the concerns with parent engagement, when we think of a model where you're going to do home visits in districts across the country, a lot of times you're talking about visiting homes and apartments and complexes right around the school community. What we have in Rochester City are students and families from all over the city crossing zones and living pretty far apart, attending various schools. So to our teachers, I do understand the challenge of what expectations of home visits would be. So I love the last caller's option of how can we do more with technology, with phone calls, Skype, social media to make sure that we're really engaging our parents and families in a meaningful manner.
Thank you, Tedna. Let's see here. This is Nancy in Rochester next on the phone. Go ahead, Nancy.
Hello. I have a question for the superintendent. Could you please address the concern that many of us have that the libraries at the elementary level, 14 of them, are scheduled to only have half-time librarians this school year, including, by the way, number 17 school.
Yeah, go ahead, Superintendent. Yep, thank you, Nancy.
So first, I share your concern. I believe our libraries serve as an important vehicle for inspiring a love of reading in our students. When you have a true neighborhood school, a lot of times the library itself serves as the hub for community gatherings, for summer checkout programs, for summer reading series, and the like. So I share the last caller's concern. All of that said, I would be remiss if I didn't say I didn't have a full understanding of the budget process that was conducted last year under our previous leadership. I do anticipate looking intently at our upcoming budget and making sure that we're prioritizing appropriately to make sure that we're supporting and putting resources behind what our highest priorities are in the district. So, again, I share the concern of making sure our libraries are fully staffed. And please just look to me to hold me accountable as we present a balanced budget for this next school year.
Demela in Rochester, next on the phone with the superintendent. Go ahead, Demela.
Yes, I just want to go back to the poverty statement that was mentioned earlier. And I've been here for 23 years. I'm from rural East Texas, grew up on a farm, spent 12 years in the Army, ran my own business for 19 years, and working on a nonprofit 501c3 nonprofit educational organization. And ever since I've been here, they've been fighting this war on poverty. And the reason Rochester is losing the war on poverty is because they are fighting the wrong war. The fight to be had is environment. You have kids growing up in environments that are not conducive to learning. Even the most brilliant kid, if that kid has to leave his home and his mother has a black eye or broken ribs or doing crack, and that kid opens that door, and the neighborhood looks like a landfill, and he's dodging gangs and prostitution and everything else in between, that kid can leave that house physically, but he cannot leave it psychologically. He can't leave that environment psychologically. And every time that bell rings, that kid knows I'm one step closer to going back. That's all I have to say.
Tamela, thank you. Go ahead, Superintendent.
I couldn't agree more, and I hope to reiterate what I said before, that it's both and. I will never shy away from the responsibility that I have as superintendent, nor the responsibility that we have as educators of our family's most prized possessions, our students. So my commitment is doing whatever we can from bell to bell to make sure our children are safe, supported, and receiving a high-quality education. The other side, as the last caller mentioned, it is the school system alone cannot combat all of the challenges that poverty presents in this great city. We truly need to partner with law enforcement, with the city, with the state, and everyone involved to make sure we're partnering to combat things like violence, drug abuse, homelessness, and the like, attracting businesses to this great city. To make sure we're all working together to mitigate the impact of poverty on education and the success of our students from K-12 and beyond.
I just want to sort of redirect listeners to a recent conversation on Richard Rothstein's book, Producer Megan Mack. It's The Color of Law. That's the name of the book, The Color of Law. I mean, this probably should be read in every school. And I had a conversation with the author. So to Demela's point, what Demela is talking about is some of the symptoms of poverty. When you have concentrated poverty, you're going to have crime, domestic issues, drugs. And Demela's talking about the personal responsibility involved in trying to make sure kids can go to school and not have to deal with that. And I sympathize with that, even if I can't, from my own experience, empathize with that. But The Color of Law tells us that Rochester is just one community in a country that created concentrated poverty by choice through racist policies, starting at the federal government all the way on down, especially in the 1930s, 40s, 50s, 60s. And so when you have communities like that, where kids are dealing with that, that's the outcome of decades-long racist poverty policies. And I just look at the job that you have to do, Superintendent, and I think, you know, what does success look like to you? Give me some metrics, because I'm sure, you know, when you're interviewing for the job, they're saying, well, how are you going to define it? Mm-hmm. What's a realistic measure of success for you? in 3 years, in 5 years, in 10 years?
So I'm laughing because I asked the same question in the days leading up to today, that right now I feel that folks have shied away from answering that question. It's easy for me as superintendent to answer that question because people would say, you know, what do you hope to be measured against? I've really turned it on people to say, I've heard so much about failure in Rochester City. What does success look like? We have graduation rates climbing, soaring above most districts in New York State, yet I still hear it's a failing school district. So some of the things I've looked at to just say this is what I would applaud if I could leave this great city in a great state many years down the road. One would be to see graduation rates that would rival any urban district in the country. Two, our reading and math proficiency has to improve based on the standards set by the New York State Education Department. That has to improve in a significant manner. Our chronic absenteeism rate, I cannot sleep at night knowing where we are with our chronic absenteeism rate, particularly at our elementary school level. It's heartbreaking. Disproportionality of special education and suspension rates. When we think of the school-to-prison pipeline, my role and our educator role and what are we contributing to and how are we detracting from contributing to those numbers. The most important metric that I would be most proud of is an increase in enrollment that I keep coming back to when I said it's not just East. I am very, very concerned with listening to our parents and saying, why not Rochester City? What are we missing with our educational programming, environment, and the like to make you choose Rochester City Schools as your first choice? So I've seen a stair step down in enrollment, a stair step up in charter, and I would love to turn that around. Not as a competition with anyone. My expectation and my strong desire is to say families are choosing Rochester City School District as their school of choice for their child's education.
And in our last few minutes, I want to ask you for a little bit of critique of news media. And here's why. This is going to be a softball, but I want to do this. And I think this is serious. I think it's important. Here's why. You have this really interesting work background and, frankly, this life background that's given you all these different stops from your childhood all the way through your professional life to the position you're in now. My own work background is a little more narrow, but I've been in commercial television. I've done some print work, and now here I am in public radio, and I think it's a great fit. But I've seen the different ways crime is covered, schools are covered, city vis-a-vis suburbs is covered. And it was just a couple of years ago that a member of the New York State Assembly said on this program that he grew up in Rochester, and now he lives in Livingston County, and he wouldn't go back to his old neighborhood even in an armored car. Mm-hmm. And I said, I don't even live that far. I live in Rochester. I didn't mm-hmm. live that far from where I'll take you. And he said, no. That was his perception. And I think it comes from news media coverage, which can be lacking context and could be creating fear. At the same time, the media has to cover when things aren't good, whether it's violence, drugs, poor graduation rates, etc. So what do you think the media can improve on as it covers substantively the Rochester City School District?
One, to continue to hold the school district accountable. I will never shy away from something that we can improve upon. That said, if we're all in the business of covering what matters to our residents in Rochester City, they are interested in hearing about why Rochester City is an amazing place to be, why there are schools that are thriving and going above and beyond what is expected. In our nation, there's so much negative coverage. I can't tell you the smile that comes to my face when I see a great story of a child who has overcome significant challenges and walking into their first college dorm room experience. So what I would love to hear from the media is, yes, hold us accountable for what we're not doing well, but don't slant a story that really should be celebrating our great city and our students and our families and turn it into a message of argument and dissent and division.
And finally, how do you generally think the media, even on a national level or where you've been in the past, how does it do uncovering schools? Pretty well, lacking context, maybe missing some of the points sometimes?
I've not shied away from, it broke my heart to look at just the number of negative stories to positive stories when I was researching this great city all the way back in January up until May, when I was actually interviewing as a finalist. I just looked through the lens of my kids, Mia and Aiden, and if they Googled their school system or they turned on the news and the leading story is something about their school system and it's nothing but they're not serving you well, this is a failing system, and we are at a loss of what to do, I do worry about what that message can send to our most prized possessions.
Well, we don't mind being held accountable in journalism, and I know you don't mind being held accountable in your job. It's a hard one. I hope we have a lot of conversations, and I've really appreciated your time this hour.
Thank you. You as well. Looking forward to it.
Terry Dade is the new superintendent of the Rochester City School District, and listeners, we archive all the conversations online. If you missed any part of it, of course, wxxinews.org/connections, and more connections coming up next hour.